number is this? Is this one?
Okay. Good. Nice title. All right. So our story so far. So we've been talking a little bit in an introductory sense about the themes of tzedakah, and hopefully to try to get a little bit of context for the Gemara and Samach Zayin, which brings many sugyas of tzedakah in a row. So starting with De Machsoro, which we'll hopefully get to soon, but first just to say a little bit more about how we can relate to this mitzvah as a whole. So we started to say yesterday that we have a concept of chesed and a concept of tzedakah, and they are joined concepts with some differences. So for example, the Gemara in the Sefer Sukkah on Daf Mem Pesach in the days, highly recommend you take a look at that Gemara. And we'll come back to it also a little bit later. But the Gemara there contrasts chesed and tzedakah and says that in some sense of the word, chesed is gedola. Gemilus chasadim is even greater than tzedakah. And the Gemara gives three reasons why that's true. Three ways in which chesed is greater, which might mean more encompassing, which might mean it's a more frequent opportunity, might mean it accomplishes more. However you want to translate gedola in that context, the Gemara says, on the one hand, tzedakah is with one's money, the mamono, while gemilas chasadim is the mamono ube gufo. It's something that you basically put all of yourself into. Tzedakah is something that only goes towards aniyim, while chesed goes to aniyim and ashirim, so it addresses a bigger population. And in a different sense of the word of the population, tzedakah only goes to the living, while chesed goes to the living and the no longer living. So for those three reasons, the Gemara distinguishes chesed and tzedakah, while at the same time, in a way we'll come back to, the Gemara also links chesed and tzedakah. So it helps us get a little bit of a perspective as to what is the definition of tzedakah, and in what way is it comparable to chesed, and in what way is it different. So on the one hand, it's different in that chesed is more all-encompassing, while tzedakah is focused specifically on material aid, on giving somebody money or other value, and chesed is broader. And also, as we see relevant to our Gemara very specifically, that tzedakah is something directed to aniyim. So that's very much what our Gemara is going to take up. What does it mean, aniyim specifically? What's the definition of an ani, practically speaking? Are there ways in which a person is not going to be considered an ani? And how does that affect how tzedakah is practiced? So those statements are important in terms of more narrowly defining tzedakah, but also in terms of establishing that, at least in a broader sense, tzedakah and chesed are connected to each other. So we then noted that the Torah has a mitzvah of tzedakah and parashas Re'eh, that you should open your hand. And at the same time, right before that, the Gemara tells us the Torah has two losases, two lows, los sikpots and los ames. You shouldn't clench your fist and you shouldn't harden your heart. And you could have read that as just an introduction to the essay. You know, by the way, don't be stingy, but give tzedakah. But as Tosfos in our Masechta emphasizes, that it's not just like that, but these are actually surim. These are actual prohibitions. And that's a scary thought, because we have to try to figure out, what does that mean practically? Are we being told if we turn down any request for tzedakah, we are not only missing out a mitzvah opportunity, but we're in violation of lavin, like we said yesterday. It's like you're wearing shat and eating treif at the same time. It's a pretty hefty burden. So how do we address that question? And then we noted that it would seem to be that if somebody is faking, if somebody comes to ask you for tzedakah and they don't really need it, they're an actor in disguise as a poor person, and you give them tzedakah, you'd probably be pretty upset, you feel like you've been scammed, you feel like you didn't really accomplish anything and he did something wrong. And yet, in the context of Avraham Avinu, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, it seems like that's what's happening. That Avram is pulled out of his tent to go take care of these three travelers who seem to need hospitality, and yet they're not really human beings, they're angels, they don't have any actual physical needs. So we left off with the question, what's the difference? Why is that not similar to somebody scamming you, an actor pretending to be poor and taking your money? Avram's time is no less valuable than our money, so why was he not equally scammed out of his time in this Hachnasa Sarachim? So to give that question any thought, anyone have any suggestions? Yes?
He was scammed.
Oh, so that's it. So Akash Baruch Hu, it's a good scam. It's a Heluga scam.
He tries this all the time.
Right. Oh, wow. Works in the scam. Works in the sphere. Okay, no, so I hope we're defining scamming in a different way.
No, but like,
we have some different meaning.
No, like, Avram clearly was troubled by the fact that he was not able to do chesed.
Right.
And God did him a chesed by allowing him to feel like he was doing chesed. He made him feel good because he gave him a mitzvah to do. Might not be that the from an objective perspective, it was an actual mitzvah, but he felt good about it. He allowed him to try to do the mitzvah, which comforted him, which was, I guess, a chesed on its own.
So we'll soften the word scam in that context if you want to say that it is a scam, but still it seems a little bit surprising. Also, you're saying basically it's like if my little daughter tells my wife she wants to help in the kitchen, so my wife gives her a little job to do that may not actually have any impact on what's really happening, but she feels like, you know, like she's doing something, so she's occupied. So is that how we're perceiving Avram Avinu in the story? And then really, we're just, you know, humoring him. He wants to do a chesed, so let him feel good, let him think he's doing a chesed.
Well, he was sick, right? He was right. Covered from his veil.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a random moment in Avram Avinu's time. It was very critical. He was like clearly in a lot of pain. So
this was basically a refuah for him.
Yeah,
it was,
say that
so the reason to do it is it was justified in making him feel better, even though it wasn't really anything in terms of what he was actually looking for. That's quite a statement. I think there may be a little bit more to it, hopefully. But I hear where you're coming from. You're saying, like, in real life, that would be justified, right? That if you were, if you had an opportunity, let's say, I mean, in our own real lives, let's say you met somebody who really needs to feel like they're making a difference, and it's going to impact on their health, and therefore you pretended they were making a difference even when they weren't. So that would be something you would justify doing. That would seem to be a reasonable thing to do. So too, Kadosh Baruch Hu did the same thing. Okay.
Maybe.
Could be. There might be a little more to it, but okay, who's up first?
If you suspect someone of being scammed, you have to give them stuff.
Oh, so that's, our Gemara is very much going to get to that. That's a huge theme in our Gemara, and that's going to be relevant to some of the things we'll get to today, but in terms of details, we'll come back to that. Right?
Could it be that he did a chesed, but it wasn't tzedakah?
Oh.
Meaning that chesed is doing something nice or whatever, but tzedakah is only if the person actually needs it?
Okay, so that's itself interesting. So are there kind of sub-levels within this chesed realm? I think you're right. I think you're onto something. I'll have to flesh that out a little bit more.
Maybe it's because, like, when Hashem made it really hot and that, you know, Abraham would have no guests,
mm-hmm.
that's in order to make Abraham, you know, be able to heal and feel better and, like, take his rest. However, you know, this wasn't accomplished because Abraham was just like, you know, he's very worried. He wanted to, you know, be able to do for other people. So he wasn't feeling any better. He wasn't getting any more rest, you know, than actually going out and helping guests. So therefore, Hashem brought guests because he saw that his whole purpose of making it hot outside and everything wasn't accomplishing his purpose.
But that's in the same sense as what you also said. Basically, you know, it was there as a refuah for him, but it didn't really involve any actual chesed.
And also another distinction is that Hashem never let Abraham know that, you know, what he sent was angels, versus did he ever let Abraham know that he sent angels?
Yeah, he certainly didn't know by the end. Maybe that he even figured it out in the middle. That's a discussion in the Farshim. Certainly after it was over, when they revealed the mission, he definitely knew, but maybe he even knew earlier on, which is itself interesting.
Maybe it's coming to show that post facto, after the actual action itself, the mindset of the individual is important and it weighs in on the action that he does. Like for Avram, he didn't care whether or not they're malachim or real people. But for the tzedakah, it doesn't matter whether or not you give the tzedakah and your mindset at the time.
It's a way of making a point. The Torah tells us the story specifically as a way of making a certain point about what the mitzvah is specifically, or some detail of mitzvah, which may be true. It's interesting. In general, this mitzvah, you know, the Chafetz Chaim discusses that Avram, he spent his whole life on chesed, and yet this is the episode which the Torah spells out in the most detail. And we know we have the Sol Masorah that Avram was such a Baal Chesed, but the Torah doesn't go in the Torah Shebichsav into so much detail about his chesed, except there. Right? In the beginning of Vayera, so we have this very detailed story about everything he did, all the specifics, what exactly he brought out, and the Chafetz Chaim and his Sefer Avos Chesed has a lot about what we can derive from the story, and he comments there that there's probably a reason why this is the one chesed story about Avram is actually detailed in the Torah. So you might also be onto something, that there is something we're supposed to glean from this episode specifically. So perhaps what we could say, and this is what a number of Sfarim want to suggest, is that if you talk about chesed as a mitzvah, so Staka we just saw, there is a source in Parshas Vehei, but the broader chesed, helping people out, Tachnos HaSorachim, Bikur Cholim, Nichum Aveilim, what's the source in the Torah for this mitzvah? How do you know there's a mitzvah of chesed as a whole? Now, where does it say that in the Torah? So that's an important source for how to treat people, probably more of a negative sense, what you shouldn't do for the most part, or Lufnim Mishur Sadin, depending on how you understand it. It's probably not about the basic everyday chesed, although it's not irrelevant. What else might be a possible source, Sammy? So that's one possibility. Sorry, I cut you off for a single
halacha.
Right, so one possibility is b'halachta b'drachav. Right, where does it say that? It says that at least 8 times in Sefer Devarim. Chafetz Chaim counts in Avos Chesed that at least 8 times in the Torah, which all happen to be in Sefer Devarim, there is some form of the phrase b'halachta b'drachav, that you should walk in God's path. In Latin, that's known as imitatio dei. You should imitate God. So the Gemara, in a few places, in Sota and Daf Yudalet and elsewhere, so the Gemara addresses, what does that mean to walk in God's path? You know, we don't really have the same skill set, right? So what does it mean to imitate God? How do you imitate God? So says the Gemara, Mahu kover mesim, mafata kover mesim, Mahu malbish arumim, mafata malbish arumim. The Gemara in Sota notes the Torah begins and ends with chesed. The last thing in the Torah is God buries Moshe Rabbeinu, kuras mesim, that's in chesed. And the first thing in the Torah, one of the first things in the Torah is that God provides clothes for Adam and Chava, it's Malbish Arumim. So there's chesed in the beginning, there's chesed in the end, the Torah starts and ends with chesed. So if you want to know how to imitate God, so you should do things like that. You should engage in acts of chesed. The Gemara in Shabbos has a little bit differently, focusing on the midah that's involved, Mahu Rachum V'chanan, Nafata Rachum V'chanan, he is kind and compassionate. You should be kind and compassionate. So it seems like that is one source for the mitzvah of chesed, that God is chesed, and we are told to imitate God, so that means do acts of chesed. Aaron? So then there's another source. What about the ahavta l'recha kamocha? So the Torah says that you should love your fellow as yourself, and what that means is a big discussion. It's not an easy pasuk, as popular a pasuk as it is. It's not an easy pasuk to practice into halacha, because what does it mean to love someone else as yourself? Is that really telling us to do something active? That's very difficult, because that's a high standard. You're supposed to have as much positive efforts on behalf of somebody else as you do for yourself. It's pretty much impossible to do. So the first, you have a little bit of a hard time figuring out what exactly is the directive of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. But at least to deal with the Rambam says explicitly in Hilchas Eivel that V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is, like Aaron is saying, is the source for the acts of chesed that we do. All the mitzvahs of chesed that we perform are derivations of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So the ahava is the effort to try to help people. That's apparently what the Torah means when it says to love someone else. And just like you would want somebody to help you with your needs, so you should also help others with their needs. And the Rambam has a little bit of a difficult statement, because he goes on to say that the specific chesed that we have of Bikur Cholim, Nichum Aveilim, Machnas HaSorachim, all the different subcategories, so he writes that's Midivrei Sofer. Sounds like that's Midin Derabbanan. So that's a little bit difficult to understand if it's already included in the broad mitzvah and HaTorah. So, A, why is it needed that Chazal would make these new categories? And two, what's the significance of that? That's a big discussion, not necessarily for today. But what's interesting for now is that the Rambam does include Chesed as part of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So we have apparently two sources. Right? We have Sammy's source of Halachta B'drachav, and we have Aaron's source of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. And the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam brings both. The Rambam records each as a mitzvah. So if both of them basically translate to du chesed, so what's the need to have two separate mitzvos that say the same thing? Why do we have two commandments in the Torah, setting aside the fact that Balach the Bedracha, for example, is said many times, okay, we'll boil that all down into one mitzvah, without paying attention to how many times it's mentioned in the Torah, but just how many make the cut as one of the 613. So for some reason, this is two of the 613. So why is this two? What's the need for two separate mitzvahs, which basically say the same thing? Any thoughts? Why would I need two mitzvahs to cover the same territory? Yes, Maury?
I don't know how this impacts it practically, but just focus of each mitzvah is different. Balach the Bedracha is imitating God, meaning you're treating human beings, but it's because of imitation of God. Mm-hmm. Balach the Bedracha is directed at helping humans, probably for the sake of helping humans.
Oh.
It's more like Be'anon Chavira, and the first one is Be'anon Lacha.
Very good. So a lot of Achronim say what Morty just said, essentially, that the two mitzvos happen to cover the same territory, but they're accomplishing different things. And that will mean that they're not always accomplishing, they're not always covering the same territory. They'll overlap in huge ways, but as we'll see, there'll be differences in terms of how they're applied. But, to begin with, is about providing service for people who are in need. So you have to translate the pasuk practically as saying that if you were missing something, you would not want to be neglected. You would want somebody to provide what you're missing. So therefore, so too, provide for those who are missing something, those who are sick, those who are mourning, those who are hungry, whatever it is. And the halachta bedracha, which will also tell you to do the same activities, but it's coming for a different reason. That this type of behavior is behavior that makes you more godlike. A part of the aspiration of the Jew is to be godlike. And therefore, that means you should do these actions which nurture a sense of chesed. The more you engage in acts of kindness, the kinder you become. The more you do these activities practically, the closer you are to a godlike personality. And therefore, it's worthwhile doing these things. So, whether you want to call that bin adam l'makom or bin adam la'atzmo, is a possible category that exists as well. But the essential point that Morty is saying is correct, according to this understanding, that you have a mitzvah of helping people, that's your halacha v'recha kamocha, and a mitzvah of working on your own personality, that's the halachta b'drach. And both of them mean you should help people who are in need. So if that's the case, so it could be, what was Avraham Avinu's need at this time? So Avraham is laid up for a few days. Right? He had surgery. He's out of commission. Okay, so let him take a break. What's so terrible? Why was he not comfortable that way? So it seems that he had discovered God at this point, right? He's looking to create a divine personality within himself. He has become somebody who has sought a path to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through his practice of chesed. And he was feeling anguish that he was atrophying, so to speak, that here he doesn't have an opportunity to engage in the chesed muscle, to engage in this godlike behavior that makes him more like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what he missed. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, okay, I'll give you an opportunity to do that. I'll give you an opportunity to work on this Midas HaChesed. So as far as we have for Recha Kamocha, that's Taka only relevant if you have somebody who actually needs something. If there's somebody who is missing something and you can help them, so then you have to recha kamocha, you have to do that. And if they're not around, they don't know when you need something, okay? So then there isn't a responsibility to take care of. But balach de bedracha comes from a different place. You want to constantly be engaged in acts of kindness so that you are more like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was what Avram was missing, and that's what was addressed. So perhaps in that case, just to say a little bit more than what Yosef was saying, it's not that he was kind of fooled into thinking he was doing a chesed like my little daughter is in the kitchen, but that he actually was doing this mitzvah of chesed, the mitzvah of halachta bedracha, he was involved in. he was creating a more godlike personality through his exercise of the chesed muscle. Happens to be that there wasn't anybody right then who actually needed it, so it wasn't v'yahav l'reicha kamocha, but it was v'halachta b'drachah. Right?
So there's one like chayav in v'halachta b'drachah that they're alone by themselves?
So the question of what that would mean practically, but yeah, it's a lifelong endeavor, you know, trying to have the result within yourself of engaging in chesed, so whatever that means, practically speaking, when the opportunities present itself. So Avram felt that he was missing the opportunity, he wasn't, I guess, able to perform it, he was off the hook because he wasn't missing anything, but he wanted to actively work out this muscle, and that was the opportunity that he was given, and these angels showing up. Right.
I mean, when you said that in the case of your wife allowing your child in the kitchen, that's also a case of halachah.
I mean, in terms of the helping being a chesed, or in terms of like the interactive kibbutzim, if you want to focus on that, right. Within that example, we could find mitzvot that it could be relevant. But let's say, for example, if somebody wasn't involved in anything that could be classified as a mitzvah, but we just wanted to make them feel good, so is that what's happening here? Or maybe it's more, maybe that there is actual chesed components. Hi.
Where do other like emetate deo like sukim come into play, like kadoshim tiyu and stuff like that?
So kadoshim tiyu, I mean, in terms of it saying ki kadoshim tiyu, so therefore you should be like God, right? So that's addressing something else. It's interesting how it impacts. It doesn't sound on the surface like kadoshim tiyu is about chesed. The way the Rishonim explained it over there, it sounds like it's more about prisha. It's more about being separated. Rashi understands being separate from arayos. Rabban understands being separate from all kinds of excesses and anything that takes you away from holiness. There are those who understand that it's also about helping others. There's a famous introduction, I think we mentioned it last semester for some reason, I don't remember why. It was a great Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University named Rav Shimon Shkap. For much of his career he was in other yeshivas, but there was a year that he was in Yeshiva University, so we'll take credit. But others may know him as associated with Hell's Yeshiva. But Rav Shimon Shkap, in his Sefer Shari Yosher is a Sefer which talks about very deep lumdisha things like Edus and Chazakas and Sveikas and things like that. But he has a very beautiful Hashkafic introduction where he talks about a lot of ideas about man's responsibility in this world. And there he understands Kedoshim to you in the sense that you're suggesting that Kedusha means to be committed to others, means to be devoted to other people other than yourself, and therefore he suggests that when the pasuk says kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani, which sounds like it means you should imitate God, I am holy, so as the song goes, right, kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani, I am holy, so you must be. But Chazal understands it differently, right? Chazal understands it as kind of a contrast. It's a surprising statement. The Medrash says that the pasuk says kedoshim tiyu, Chazal put in yochel kimoni. You might think you could be holy like I'm holy. Talmud Omar, ki kadosh ani, kidushasi gdola mikdushasten. That Kosh Baruch is saying you should be holy, but don't think you could be as holy as me. My holiness is above yours. You could be holy, but not that holy. So it's like kind of opposite in Mitatio Dei. Don't get too out of control here. You can't be as holy as me. So what does that mean? What's the thrust of that whole statement? So Shmuel Shkap suggests that it means that kedusha is to be devoted to others. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no human needs, so he doesn't have to worry about himself at all. He can be totally devoted to everybody else. But human beings, they can be devoted to others to a great extent, but not like God, because they're still human. They have their own personal needs. So they have to worry about themselves first, but then they can try to devote a lot of attention to other people. So Kedoshim Tiyu, not exactly like God, somewhat less, but with that midah of devotion to others, so it's a little bit connected and a little bit in some ways different. But in any event, so this idea that there are two tracks to this mitzvah of chesed, so there are many ramifications of that, and probably even more so directly relevant for our sugyas, that we could probably assume that there is a similar structure to tzedakah. Right? That tzedakah, as a brother, let's say, of chesed, is something very closely linked with chesed, probably has both components to it. That it is, on the one hand, something that we do for others, that we're supposed to be there to fill in that which is missing for other people, and it's something that we engage in as a component of halachta b'drachah, And it's something that we do so that we become more godlike in our personality. There are discussions in the Achronim, for example, if you look in the Sefer Klichemda in Parshas Re'eh, Klichemda was a student of the Avnezer. We speak about the Avnezer a lot here. The Avnezer was the Sachet of the Rebbe, he was a great Gadol B'Torah, and he had many students who wrote beautiful Svarim. So one of them was Rav Meir Dan Plotsky, who wrote a Sefer called Klichemda. So he's one of the many who have a discussion of what is the mitzvah of tzedakah. Is the mitzvah of tzedakah something that is essentially a ben adam lechaveiro, something that you do because other people need you and you're there to help them? Or do you do it because it's a ben adam lemakom, in some sense? It's really there for God's sake, and people are just the venue through which you fulfill this mitzvah. Which was a question I think you were asking this morning during Seder, right? Somebody was asking this morning during Seder that do you view tzedakah, I said you should rephrase the question a little bit, right? Do you view tzedakah as a mitzvah that is on the giver or on the recipient? And that essentially it could be it has these two components, to say it in the context of these ideas, that is it about helping the recipient or is it about the desire of God that you be like Him through engaging in acts of now, these two tracks, by the way, and we'll discuss in a little bit more detail, whether in terms of chesed or in terms of tzedakah, so they overlap a lot, but they don't overlap 100%. So we'll see some examples of where there are divergences, and sometimes they could be in contradiction with each other. You probably heard the story about the chesed who calls up his rabbi. The rabbi's in the hospital, so the chesed wants to visit him. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, he calls him up, he says, Rabbi, I'd like to come visit you. And he says, no, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd rather you don't come right now to come visit me. And the chassid says, but Rabbi, I want to come visit you. And the Rabbi says, really, it's not a great time. I don't want you to come. But I want to come visit you. Please let me come. And he says, I'm telling you, it's not a great time to come. And the chassid says, but Rabbi, I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And the Rabbi responds, I'm not a lulav. Right? There are different kinds of mitzvos that have different types of interactions. So a lulav, you understand, okay, if I'm taking a mitzvah, taking a lulav on Sukkot, I'm doing that for my sake. I have a mitzvah of lulav, so I'm going to take the lulav on Sukkot, and I don't have any responsibility to worry about how much the lulav, how much it works for him. But when it comes to Bikur Cholim, so Bikur Cholim, one could get confused, right? Because there is a component in which you're trying to help the cholah. And there is a component in which you are doing something for yourself through this mitzvah also, so it's possible for you to get confused. Now, one could argue that neither component applies in such a case, that Bikur Cholim, by definition, only means that you're doing something productive for the other person. If the person doesn't want you to come right now, it's not any type of Bikur Cholim, which is a fair argument to make. But at the very least, there's a conflict here between the two ideas. And that's important to be aware of, where different parts of the chesed or tzedakah obligation could possibly be in conflict with each other. So when it comes to the question of tzedakah, and is tzedakah one or the other, I think the likely answer is probably that it's both. Probably that there is a fulfillment of the halakha b'dracha in acts of tzedakah, and there is a focus as well on helping people who are in need and being directed towards their concerns specifically. And sometimes we'll emphasize one, and sometimes we'll emphasize the other, and sometimes we'll have to watch out for one because it's compromising the other. And all of this is a part of what goes into the mitzvah of tzedakah. So our sugya, especially talk about the machsoro and some of the other concerns that are going to come out in the sugya, are going to be very much built on these two tracks, that there are two different things that we're trying to cultivate when it comes to tzedakah. Hi.
Someone asks for tzedakah and you give them a 10 agarot or whatever, mm-hmm. Israel, and they throw it back in your face.
Yeah.
Have you fulfilled halachah v'dracha but not b'avdol rechecha kamocha? Is that what we're saying?
Yes, that's a good question. There's a lot of elements to that. So that we have to see. That's also going to be relevant more to some ideas from our Gemara, so let's hold off on the specifics of that. But the question is very much to the point. Let's see if this is safe from mitzvahs in here.
Okay.
So, keep that question in mind, we'll come back to it. It's going to come very much into some of the passages that we see in the Gemara. But this probably impacts on a couple of points. So first of all, one issue that's going to be relevant, and then we'll expand on this a little bit more in the coming days, is what about tzedakah that you give without kavanah? Right, let's say you give tzedakah with either less than perfect kavanah or without kavanah at all. Right, you can imagine, let's say, if somebody drops money out of his pocket and it ends up being picked up by somebody who needs it. Is that an element of tzedakah? Or what if someone knowingly gives tzedakah but does so without what you might call the purest of intent? Now, what do we mean by impure intent or lack of complete purity of intent? There's all kinds of different levels. Sorry?
Taxes
might be one, right? So tax that you want to have, although it's going to even out there, but let's say, okay, you want to have a tax deductible, you want to have a tax write-off. That might be an example of an act of tzedakah that could help someone, but doesn't necessarily come from a v'alachta b'drachah of perspective. But what else? There's all kinds of different gradations of lack of total lishma. What other types of lack of lishma could you have?
Right?
So kavod could be a big one, right? Now, on the one hand, so you might say, so if you're doing it for kavod, how does that fit in? But then you also will recall that we encourage kavod when it comes to tzedakah. So it doesn't seem like that's such a bad thing. Now, is that because it's still considered to be halachta b'drachah through that? Or is it because we're more interested in making sure that the poor get the money and this is going to encourage it, and therefore whatever it takes is all we care about because it's all about getting them the help that they need? Or is it a little bit of both? What other types of shalom lishma?
So that my children will have olam haba.
Oh, so that is Gemara. The Gemara in a few places says what you're referring to?
No.
Okay, we'll come to yours in a second. But the Gemara says this is a different level of possibly shalom lishma, but the Gemara definitely considers it to be interesting. The Gemara says that hanosin sela b'shvil sheyichya b'ni, that in this case olam hazeh, but let's say Rachman was selling somebody's child is sick. So somebody says, okay, I'm going to give tzedakah with the intent that this should be a source of merit for my sick child. So that, the Gemara says, hareze tzadik gomer, that a person who does that is considered to be totally righteous, not missing anything. Now there's some question about the girsa, should it be tzadik gomer, should it be tzedakah gemura, maybe the act of tzedakah is perfect, even though the individual is somewhat not getting everything. There's a lot to talk about what exactly the Gemara is telling us, but that's relevant to the discussion. What if you're looking for the zchus for yourself rather than for any real concern for the audience specifically? How does that play in?
Amir? I was just going to say about like pressure or guilt.
Oh, so that's a big thing also, and that's something that we're very much going to have to try to figure out, because we know that it's a widespread practice for gaboy tzedakah to use guilt as a method of extracting tzedakah. And that's something we have to figure out why that works, right? Because if you were to use that to get something you want for yourself, that would be akin to theft. Right? It wouldn't be actual theft, but we have a concept called avak gezel. So for example, if you're sitting down to lunch with somebody and he starts taking out his pretzels, and you say, wow, those pretzels look great, can I have one? So the Gemara says that that's a problem because he is going to feel pressured to give you the pretzel. So he's giving it to you, not of his total free will. So it's not actual gezeila, but it has something in common with it. The same way you put a gun to someone's head, so they give you their money, so to speak, willingly, but clearly it's not full will. They're just doing so because they'd rather give over the money than get shot. So too, he'd rather give you his lunch than feel like it's not nice, feel like he's being pressured. So it's also something in the spectrum of gezel. So when it comes to tzedakah, to steal money for tzedakah, we know is for sure not acceptable. So why is it acceptable to pressure somebody to give tzedakah if that's also somewhere along the line of gezel? That's something that we'll have to figure out, and also plays into this whole discussion. Hi?
To give tzedakah to get to die after that.
Okay. Right, which is similar to what?
There was a wedding in Brooklyn the other day, and there were a lot of pockets. Sometimes it's just better. It's worth it to give them the dollar, so we'll just stop annoying.
Oh, so that's similar to what Tamir is saying, right? So essentially, if it's basically not really free will, it's because there's a negative. The basic definition, you know, in terms of what's the difference between extortion and providing a service, is, you know, if I help you, then you pay me to help you. Okay, so then that's the value. If I cause you a problem and you pay me to go away, that's extortion. Right? So that's why Gezel, you know, as you say, he gave you money of free will. No, he gave you money because you're going to shoot him otherwise. So he's paying you off. That's theft. That's extortion. So theoretically, pressuring somebody should be along the same spectrum. And yet, when it comes to Stucca, we shift the goalpost. We're okay with that, even though we're not okay with overt Gezel. So we have to figure out why that is. And, of course, it's very relevant to our whole sugi from yesterday, or that line that we saw earlier in the Gemara and Afman Tess, that the whole question of how could you have a concept of kfiyah. Right? So we asked yesterday, why should it be surprising that the Gemara could consider that Beis Din could compel Tzedakah? How could you compel Tzedakah? So we brought up yesterday a couple of issues, why that's surprising, why it doesn't seem like this should be something that you could compel. So I don't remember if anyone said this yesterday, but this would seem to be a good question, right? If you're going to say that tzedakah should be an expression of generosity, so how generous is it? How much of a halach de bedracha is being fulfilled when somebody comes to your door with U.S. Marshals and they come and they compel you to give tzedakah? Are you really accomplishing the halach de bedracha that's involved? So that's a fair question. That's also something that we're going to have to figure out. I think that was our first.
Did you say that we're a little more lenient when it comes to like extortion and not extortion, but by tzedakah?
Well, don't call me like that. That's not exactly the point. The point is that pressure is, in terms of defining what's extortion and what's not, saying that normally a transaction is only legitimate if I'm providing something for you and you're therefore paying me. But if I cause you a problem and you pay me to go away, right, that's usually a problem. And in the extreme version, that's robbery. Extreme version is I'll kill you unless you give me money. So that's basically the most extreme version of that idea. So that's why even less extreme things are along that spectrum. If I ask you and you feel uncomfortable saying no, so then for you, me to take food from your lunch because you're uncomfortable saying no to me, so that's a problem. So when it comes to tzedakah, so we have the post shifted a little bit, that certainly overt gezel is out of the question. But pressuring somebody, which is not acceptable in other areas when tzedakah is not involved, but when it comes to tzedakah, it seems like it is acceptable. So why is that middle ground okay for tzedakah and not okay for other things? So that, and why is then gezel not okay for tzedakah? What's exactly going on over there? That's one of the things we'll have to figure out. And that connects very much to the whole kfi idea. The idea that Beis Din is going to compel someone doesn't seem like that's too generous. And how exactly does that play a role?
Does that make a difference what they're collecting for also?
What's considered to be a stocking and what's going to be... Yeah, that's definitely relevant, which is part of what we'll have to figure out. Right?
Well, it could be so much like the Rambam and getting about forcing the guy.
Right, which would be really, one of the major themes of later on in his mind.
Because the guy really does want to get like deep inside of him. So you say deep inside the guy really doesn't want to get stuck, so we're just facilitating that.
Right, so you're getting ahead of us in terms of that sugi, but that's going to be very much a topic, hopefully, in the next few weeks we'll get to explore a little bit more. But that's one of the meta questions. We talk about kfiyah in general, such a major theme in the second half of Ksuvos. So when is kfiyah ever appropriate? So is kfiyah appropriate simply because people need this and therefore it's not up to you to say no? Or somehow does it help you, does it connect to your spiritual aspirations even though you're being forced? All of that is a very legitimate question, which is going to come back again and again in terms of some of these sugyos. So another question that could be relevant also, what about the other side of the equation? Let's say you have intent to give tzedakah, but it turns out that wherever you're giving it is not actually a legitimate recipient. Right? One of the major themes of this Talmud. So what if you're giving tzedakah, but the person doesn't deserve it? So there is a Gemara at the end of the first paragraph of Bava Basra, where it sounds like if you give tzedakah to somebody who's not really a worthy recipient, that there's no mitzvah involved. And that's very difficult to swallow. Right? The idea that somebody could really be generous and kind and trying to help people and end up with no schus, that's seems a little bit difficult for that to really be the case. And there are those who suggest that maybe that's only true on one level, that maybe it's true in terms of yahav tol reyecha kamocha, you're not actually helping anyone. But in terms of halach de bedracha, maybe that is the halach de bedracha. But if you tried to help somebody who you thought was needy, just like a Ramavino in a sense, you tried to help somebody you thought was a worthy recipient, even if they weren't, maybe you still accomplished something in the halach de bedracha of pantheon.
Hi. Does it
So we're saying tzedakah only applies to somebody who actually needs the money. If I were to give somebody a gift of a certain amount of money,
mm-hmm.
I would think that's a mitzvah of Haftarach of Kamocha.
It might be. It might be a different mitzvah. It might be Haftarach of Kamocha, might not necessarily be tzedakah. And that's also part of what the Gemara in Sukkah, which you can eventually put on the official list for this year. If you look at this Gemara, it's going to be more relevant to this. It's going to show up on the list at some point, but the Gemara there explicitly says that the difference between Chesed and Tzedakah is only for anyone, and Chesed is for more. Okay, so with all those questions in mind, so now let's consider the other question that we mentioned. So what about the Lavin? Right? What about the Losa says of Tzedakah? So we're very nervous here. Are we indeed in trouble violating two separate Yisurim every time somebody asks us for tzedakah and we say no? So the Rashba addresses this a little bit, not fully, but there is a Rashba which also you should definitely take a look at. This is Gemara Masechet Shavuos and Daf Chafhei, Chafhei in the days. The Gemara talks about the question of what types of shvuas are binding and what types of shvuas aren't binding. So the general principle that a shvua is not binding if it either contradicts or affirms the Torah. If something is already a principle in the Torah, so we're considered to already be in the context of a shvua, then it's called Mushpa v'yomeh mehar Sinai, we already have an oath imposed upon us from Har Sinai. So any shvua that you take that either contradicts that or affirms that is not valid. So in that context, the Gemara talks about what if you take a shvua to give tzedakah to an ani. Is that in this category? Is that considered to be essentially a redundant reaffirmation of the Torah? The Torah already says to give tzedakah. So to take a shvua to give to an ani doesn't really add anything? Or should we say, no, it does add something? In other words, the question really becomes, does the Torah specifically tell you you have to give to any ani? Or should we say, no, it's something more general, and therefore the shvuah that you take to give to this ani is now adding on a new responsibility that wasn't necessarily there before. Hi.
It doesn't matter if you're changing the specifications, like for example, make a shvua, I want to pay X amount to an ani?
That might also be a relevant part of the equation. So that's a part of it. That's a good way to ask the question. So is there any detail that will make a difference? That essentially, does the Torah give me some kind of very specific instruction here? Or is there some way to formulate the shvua in a way that doesn't necessarily just restate what the Torah already states? Parenthetically, by the way, in one of my Sai Sims classes, this is a topic that we talk about. As we talked there about clashes between morality and law and things like that. So one of the guys asked in one of the previous semesters, so what happens, for example, if, let's say, in New York City they have a law you can't give to panhandlers on the subway? So is that a contradiction between the law and your morality, that you have a morality value that you should give to people who are asking for charity, and the law says you can't, so to what degree is that a contradiction between the law and your morality? So part of the question is what does your morality really ask of you? Does it ask that you give charity in the general sense, that you should be taking care of the poor, or does it go further than that and say, this specific poor person, you have a moral obligation to be taken care of? So that's essentially what this Gemara is addressing, right? Is there a very specific instruction from the Torah to give to this person? Or is it more general, and therefore a shvuah that you're going to take could add something the Torah is not necessarily telling us? So the Rashba discusses that question, and he basically makes two possible points, which are both very important for our Gemara here. One is that maybe this is going beyond, similar to what Avi was saying, that maybe you're only obligated to give him a certain basic amount so that he's not starving, and you're now committing to go beyond that. So part of our question, our sugya, is going to discuss what is your requirement as far as the level of somebody's request and somebody's needs. That's essentially what Dei Mahsoro is addressing. And the other possibility that Rashba mentions, which only helps us a little bit, is that you could have thought that maybe you have an obligation when somebody is in need and you know about it, And maybe that's not true. Maybe you're only obligated when he comes and asks you. So that only helps us a little bit, because we know there are certainly enough people who ask. Right? But he's being a little bit of a kula, that maybe if you know somebody needs, but he didn't ask you, so then you don't have a chiyuv of tzedaka, so the shvua is extra then in that case. So the Rambam, just to read the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, it sounds like from the Rambam that he's more machmir on this. The Rambam seems to require that you have to give tzedaka even if you know that there are people who are needy, even if they don't ask you. The language of the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvos Lo Sase, Reish Lamed Beis, is, so first of all, in terms of our two prohibitions, so at least he seems to group them into one. So it's a small comfort that you're only going to violate one Isser, Los Sipos and Los Amates, but his language is, Hiziranu Shalol Liv Noah Tzedaka V'Harchava Me'achenu HaVyonim. We are warned by the Torah not to hold back Tzedaka and aid from our needy brothers. Asher Neda Anyam. That we know about their poverty, somebody's poor and we know about it, we are prohibited from holding back Tzedaka. So the Rambam sounds like he's more machmir. He sounds like if you even know about the needy, then you're going to violate these lavin if you don't give. And the Rashba, who holds this view, is a little more makel, they have to actually ask you. But, Lamaisa, enough people ask you, so it's not much of a kula. So how much trouble are we in if we say no? So this is a major discussion that the later Svarim have, because we're in big trouble otherwise, because there's nobody who's able to say yes all the time. So what some suggest is that there's an important condition here. That when the Torah says, don't harden your heart, don't clench your fist, it's not simply being poetic. And we already made the point that it's not just poetry, but it's an actual iser. So let's take that to the next level, that the language of the iser is also a part of the definition of the iser. The Torah doesn't just say, don't ever say no. It uses a specific language in telling you how not to say no. You shouldn't harden your heart or clench your fists. In other words, what does that mean? There are good reasons for saying no. And many of the good reasons are all going to be on our daf and daf samach zayin and subas. What do they include? You're not sure if a person is trustworthy. Right? That's the Beferish Gemara, if you saw in Samach Hesed Aleph, right? We should be grateful that some people are dishonest, because that's what gives us an excuse not to give to everyone. Maybe we have other priorities. Right? That's also what our Gemara addresses. Maybe we've already reached our limit, and our Gemara talks about giving more than a fifth of your money to tzedakah. So our Gemara lists a number of good reasons why somebody might not give tzedakah.
And then you're still violating going after Hashem's way.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe, might say very much not, actually. Because you might say that what the Torah is telling you is that if any of those things apply, okay, that's a good reason to say no. If somebody comes and asks you for money, and you've already reached your tzedakah limit, or you have other priorities, even though you have money in your pocket, but there are other priorities that are going to come first, or you don't trust this guy, so those are valid reasons to say no. So perhaps what the pasuk means is if you say no for any of those reasons, okay, fine, that's understandable. So when are you in violation of the iser? Very literal application of the pasuk. What's the Torah saying? What does a person have to do to violate the iser?
Harden your heart.
Harden your heart. Clench your fist. Right? If your attitude is, listen, I've got tons of money and this guy is needy, but I just don't believe in tzedakah, so then you're in trouble. Then you're in violation of the law. But if you have any of the recognized good reasons for not giving to this person, so then you won't be in violation of this law. So perhaps what the Torah is telling us is that this mitzvah specifically, or at least this pasuk, it could be the next pasuk, might be something else, but this pasuk specifically might be telling us that this is addressed towards v'halachta d'drach. That it is not consistent with a divine personality for you to decide that you don't have to give tzedakah just because you don't believe in it. That if you're going to refuse a needy person's request because you don't think it's your problem, then that's a violation of halachta b'drach. But if you have other reasons, you believe in staka, but you can't do it, you don't have enough, you have other priorities, you don't trust this guy, whatever it is, so then, okay, fine. That doesn't take away from your halachta b'drach. You can't help this guy right now, which is unfortunate, but the halachta b'drach is preserved. So it seems like what at least that pasuk of Losikfo Tzoros Amis is talking about, that's talking about v'halachta b'drach. And if you look, the truth is, it's really explicit in the Rambam. So I kind of held back on the other half of the Rambam, so the first half of the Rambam we just read, where he says you should not hold back staka from somebody who you know about. So on the one hand, he sounds like he's being quite machmir, that even if he doesn't ask you, you know about his poverty, so you're in violation of the law of it. But he goes on to say, after this, asher neido and yom, that you know about their poverty, v'yecholteinu lahachzik lahem, we are able to help them. So it has to be possible for us to do it. That's also a crucial concern. If we say no because we can't, that's not necessarily going to be included in this issur. And then the next line is the key line even more. V'hu amro lo sa'ameitz es levavcha. And that's what the Torah says, don't harden your heart. Ze azhara miliknos midas hakilos v'achzaris. What does it mean? It means that is an issur in the Torah for one to allow himself to become stingy and mean. That's the intent of the Torah. So it's essentially explicit in the Rambam, the Chumra and Akula there. The Chumra is that if you know about it, you're in trouble, even if they don't ask. But the condition is there as well, that that's assuming that you can help them. And the goal is explicitly you shouldn't become an achzar. You shouldn't become a cruel person. But if you know that you have another good excuse, so to speak, you have a good reason, so you're not cruel, you just can't take care of this specific situation, that's not going to put you in violation of this law. So we're almost out of time. I just want to bring in a certain context to this, and then we'll daven mincha. But essentially, what do you see here? So you see that what emerges is that in the context of tzedakah, it seems quite legitimate to say that there are probably two tracks, just like we find in chesed. Even though the sources are not as explicit about it, in the case of chesed, you find clear mitzvahs one or the other. But when it comes to staka, it's probably true as well, that staka has these two components. And the first of the two psukim, losikvos, los ametz, is probably parallel to a v'halachta b'drachov kind of consideration. Now, what is the mitzvah saseh about? Is that also v'halachta b'drachov, or is that something else? And therefore, what does de machsoro correspond to? What is our sugya about? Is our sugya about a mitzvah to help people, or a mitzvah to create a divine personality, or both? That's something that we'll have to figure out, and something that's going to affect all the gemaras that are found on the staff. All the various sugyas are going to emerge from this. So what I want to do, I think we'll flow right from this point. So this Rambam that we just saw, this very much affects a question that we find in terms of how we prioritize staff in general, which our gemara only alludes to. So I think, God willing, on Sunday, maybe we'll talk in more general ways in terms of prioritizing staka that emerges from this distinction. And then we'll pick up with De Machsoru specifically from a sugya perspective on Monday with Parsha Tamar. Just to quickly recap what we spoke about today. So we asked, to pick up the question of yesterday, how could it be that Avraham Avinu was not essentially duped in the situation? So we saw that when it comes to chesed, there really are two mitzvos. We have the Re'echa Kamocha and V'halachta B'Dracha, but they're not redundant to cover the same territory, but for different purposes. One's about helping people. One is about creating a divine personality. So Avraham was more concerned about neglecting his tendency towards godliness. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll give you that opportunity. You're not missing anything. This will still allow you to continue your training. And when it comes to staka, presumably we have the same two tracks. The Achronim ask whether it's a Ben Adam L'Chaver or Ben Adam L'Makom, and we assume it makes sense to say that it's probably both. We probably have elements of both, and we have to figure out how they apply to each other. So we spoke about some questions. What about if your kavana is not perfect? And we saw many different ways in which it could be not perfect, either because you're looking for kavod, or because you're being pressured, or maybe Bezdin is forcing you, or maybe you're looking for a schus for yourself, but not necessarily to help somebody else. All different gradations along the lack of total intent spectrum. spectrum, how does that affect things? And also the other side, what if you have perfect intent, but you're not really accomplishing because the recipient is not really worthy? To what extent does that make a difference? And the Gemara that seems to imply you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of tzedakah under those circumstances, maybe it means part of you're not fulfilling, but all after the drach of you are fulfilling. And we talked about how these two mitzvahs could complement each other most of the time, but sometimes they might diverge. And we gave the example of somebody who wants to visit a chol who's not interested in seeing you, being treated like a lulav. So on the one hand, the chesed of helping somebody else is not there in that case, even if one thinks that he's fulfilling the lach b'drachah, which itself might be questionable in that case. But that also illustrates that. So then we saw the question of losiklus los ametz. How do we deal with these two lavin? We saw that on the one hand, the question is they apply anytime you know about the poor person, like the Rambam says, or only if somebody asks. That was a discussion the Rashba has when the Gemara says that it's possible theoretically to have a shvua about giving a poor person money. So is that not just a restatement of the Torah's value in tzedakah? So where is there extra space for you to take a shvua? And the Rashba says either because it's beyond the basic minimum requirement that you would have to give him, or because maybe he didn't ask you, that maybe it's only specifically if they asked you. And then in that context, we tried to figure out what is the scope of los siklos los ametz. So we saw that there are those who suggest that you don't violate the sisser automatically by saying no, that the language is very specific and intentional. You only violate this lav if you do it because you don't have any other good reason, you just don't believe in tzedakah. And if that's the case, it seems like this pasuk is really talking towards a v'halachta b'drachah focus. So we have to figure out then, is the next pasuk de machzorah also v'halachta b'drachah, or is that about the hatar echamocha, and also about how does these values affect how some of the decisions that we make in Sukkah that present themselves. Okay, Shukar, we'll dav mincha. Don't forget to say Yahu Yahu.